before I started filming, I was preparing and researching, you know, doing my stuff that I always do for probably about 5 or 6 months beforehand. And I thought, how do I even connect with where I'm going? So I subscribed to the Delco Times. So I would read this newspaper every day, and there would regularly be some article about Wawa or some offer or something. So to me, it kind of became this, it almost felt like a mythical place, Wawa. And so by the time I got there, I was like, oh, look, it's real. It was like Lapland. It's Wawa. That's so funny. And so, I don't know, like walking into a Wawa, like ultimately felt it was kind of an honor in a funny way, because I built up this, to me, that was the heart of Delco, was Wawa. And to sort of finally walk through the door of a Wawa, I don't know, I felt like, oh yes, I'm here. I belong. This is where it's at. Wawa.
What are must-gets when I walk into a Wawa?
Must-gets. Oh, well, I would only honestly get coffee, really. But I did just like hanging out in there. But, you know, Evan Peters, he ordered a couple of times. He would say, oh, you got to try the gobbler, the gobbler. And it was this gigantic, so it's this gigantic sub, basically, or hoagie. It's this huge hoagie. And it's like turkey and the stuffing. It's basically a Thanksgiving meal in a hoagie. A hoagie. Yeah. He was like, ah, God, I just eat that thing and I just pass out. I'm like, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, Evan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to East Town and Down, a Mayor of East Town recap podcast show. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. And with me, as always, is the very lovely and talented Leah Bonema, my co-host. Leah, how are you today?
Ah, thrilled to be here. What an episode.
What an episode. It's something. We learned a lot of revelations, a lot of secrets still being kept, a lot of weird faces, a lot of lingering shots on on people hiding things.
Yeah, a lot of every time we like learn one thing, there's a new thing that comes up that I don't understand.
Yeah, it's we've ruled some suspects out. Frank is not the daddy of DJ. Dylan is not the daddy. And I think your theory about the Deacon Mark is still holding up pretty strong.
He could definitely be the daddy, or this could all just be like red herrings. And really, he just has been like a solace to these young women. And he threw the bike out because he knew it would make him look bad. I mean, you know, it's how much, you know?
Yeah. It's I feel like, and also we find out that Katie Bailey's alive, and it doesn't look like any of the people that we think it could be, because even the suspect, the one of the major suspects to me seems to be Billy.
He's always suspicious.
Yeah, he's suspicious looking. If you look at the teaser for episode 5, he's got a gun and he's hid it in his fishing kit, and it just doesn't look good for Billy. But we didn't.
Well, it's got to be somebody with a van.
Somebody with a van, yeah.
And the only person I've seen with a van is Brianna's dad, but this van seemed to be more like an electrician van.
Oh, electrician. Okay. Yeah.
Because it has the ladders on it.
Right. Right. And Brianna's dad is more, he's got more of a food service truck van.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Although since I watched it yesterday, I watched it again and I've just been walking around the house going, let the healing begin.
Yes, let's have these. Let's have some Mayor needs a hallelujah moment. Let's briefly talk about the SNL sketch Murder Dirter. I sent that to you Sunday morning. What did you think of that?
I had a real giggle. I thought it was really funny.
Yeah, I watched it like 3 or 4 times. It's so funny.
If our listeners at home haven't seen it, Google Murder Dirter from SNL. And it's like a, you know.
It's a total parody of Mayor of East Town. Really funny. Kate Oh my God.
McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon's playing the version of Mare, but her name is Care. Pretty funny. If you're into the show, you'll definitely dig it.
They really nail it. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. The wah-wah, all that good stuff. After our episode, a couple days later, I bought a 6-pack of Rolling Rock, and I've cracked one of them open already. And I think we should just get into this, Leah. Let's get into this recap.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
So the opening shot is Mare laying in her bed. She hears Helen yelling out to her saying, "Hey, are you going to be around tonight for dinner?" She's like, "Yeah, I'll be home." And she's taking DJ to school or preschool or something. Her daughter, Siobhan, is leaving. She says goodbye. Mare gets up. She doesn't have anywhere to go. And she's like, she gets up out of her room and then she walks around in a circle until she figures out what she wants to do. And we get our very cool title card that I love. It's different every episode. What did you feel about this first opening shot? What did you think?
Well, I think a lot of this episode, and I'll loop it back to this shot, is about them learning to show affection for each other. And I think it starts in this scene where her mom's like, "Are you going to be here?" And she's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "I'll roast a chicken." You know, so it's very sort of this like, "Oh, you're going to be here for dinner. I'm going to cook for everybody."
Yeah.
So I think, you know, we can see obviously that Mare hasn't told anybody. She doesn't know what she's doing. But I thought that was a nice thing with her mom, you know, because like they pretend to like be so angry all the time. But then they show affection through sort of daily activities. "Oh, I'll cook. Oh, you're home. Let's have a chicken."
Yeah, that's kind of like how my family is. Like we show, I think my parents broke that the cycle of being loving, like physically loving to me. I think they're on both sides respectively. They're kind of like hard to a certain degree and not that emotional. It's kind of like by the things that they do for each other.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm cooking for you. I'm going to work, busting my ass for you every day. I love you. That's how I show it. You know, most people, like when Fences came out on the Denzel Washington, the film version, people always point back to, he said, "Dad, you don't like me." He said, "Who says I gotta like you?" You know, it's like, I'm feeding you. You got a roof, don't you? You know, you got a roof over here, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think you're right. I think this is where we start to see that we really get to see that they really love and care for each other. This episode, even though it was inherent, but we just see more of it this episode. I think that's a great thing to point out. So the next scene is Mare and Lori hanging out on a park bench. They're smoking and they're sitting on a bench that's dedicated to, in loving memory to, Detective Edward Fahey. The placard on the bench says, in loving memory of Detective Edward Fahey, husband to Helen, father to Marianne, dedicated protector. And they're sitting on the bench that's dedicated to him, smoking some cigs. Mare hasn't told Helen or Siobhan that she's been suspended and she's got to, you know, seek therapy and all that. And Lori tells her she's basically, it might be a good thing for her to step away for a bit because she's pushing everybody away. He says, am I pushing you away? Lori says, no. And, you know, she says, "Oh, well, my son killed himself. I'm not sorry. I'm not the life of the party." She says, "You've never been the life of the party."
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a nice moment of levity. And you can tell that they're down for each other, even though there's going to be some shit next week. But we don't know what's going to happen next week. So we'll just focus on this episode. This scene, how did you feel about it, Leah?
I really liked it. I loved just as, you know, she smokes one, I think it was a Marlboro Light. And then she's like, take the pack. You know what I mean? She's like, don't let me have it back. Which is such a like friend thing. You know what I mean? You have one, right. And then you, and then when she said, am I pushing everybody? Am I pushing you away? And then Lori said, I won't let you push me away. And then Nair put her head on Lori's shoulder,
yeah,
which is like one of the first physical affections. She, you can see that she needs support, and it was her first sort of like reaching out, the putting her head. And I think Lori knows her well enough to know not to like wrap her up in her arm or put her head back down. She just lets her be there, you know? Yeah. And I thought that was like their friendship, you know?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. That was a really good moment. Cause she needs somebody. We see the layer get peeled back a little bit more and more each episode. And I think that's like a testament to the script and the great work that everybody's doing, and Kate Winslet, especially because she's carrying the show. I don't think, was there anything else I wanted to say about that scene? What did you think that plaque meant? How did you feel about just seeing that plaque about with her dad? The dad.
I mean, I felt it was like, you know, she just got suspended from her job, and then mm-hmm. she's going back to the place where the representing the man who made her want to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know if it was more than that, or if like that's her place where she sort of finds herself again.
Mm. That might be her place where she thinks, contemplates stuff. And yeah. Yeah. And then when the next scene we get Zabel coming in, two creams, no sugar. And he's met by the chief and a new guy, Hauser. Hauser is going to, the chief tells Zabel that he's going to be the point for this case now. And Hauser, who was his PT officer, training officer, we find that out a little later, is going to help him with the case. And Zabel, it does not like it. He's pissed. So he's, you know, got the coffee for her, and he's just like, damn, where's my girl? Where's his mare?
Yeah. And you can tell right away that guy's a poop hat.
Oh yeah. He's a dick.
Yeah. Cause he's just like says dicky things right off the top.
Yeah. It just looks like he's collecting a check, and he's like, oh, what did he say? He's like, where's the creams? So he asked where the creams were. And he was like,
there's half and halves. Where's the half and halves?
Where's the half and halves? And Zabel says in the kitchen over there. Like, yeah. get him yourself, asshole.
And I think he would have gotten it. Colin Zabel is so nice. He would have literally gotten it for anybody else. But for that guy, he's like, no way. And also, when he's like, oh, somebody's got to be the dad. I.e., they're like, we got to keep looking. And that guy's right. Like, no shit. You're like, yeah. Ugh, I hate people like that.
Yeah, because Chief tells him that Frank's not the dad and Dylan's not the dad. And he makes that. Yeah, he's a dick. So we cut to the hospital. Dylan is pissed. He's found out that the baby isn't his. Baby starts. They're kicking it with the baby's just shit. The parents are like so sweet. They're super sweet with DJ. And he tells his parents, he's like, get him out. And they leave. It's kind of fucked up. We get a shot of next scene is Dawn hanging out with her granddaughter, Kenzie, which we assume is Katie Bailey's kid. She gets a call from who we think right off the bat is probably a kidnapper, requesting a ransom of $5,000, which is a third of the money, the reward money. That's red flag number one. And this caller claims that Katie's ready to come home if she gives him $5,000. How did you feel? What your thoughts on this, Leah? That scene?
Well, in the hospital scene.
Oh yeah, sure, that too.
When Dylan was like, "Get the kid out. He's not even our kid," and the parents are like, he's still a kid. Like, this is not, yeah. You know, they're obviously want to continue loving this child.
Mm-hmm.
And Dylan's obviously very angry. And then into the next scene, we hadn't met the grandchild yet. So I feel like that was our first time realizing that Katie Bailey had a kid.
That's our first time. Yeah.
So, I mean, both her and Aaron had a kid. So that I thought that was interesting. And then, you know, yeah. And then we get the phone call and, you know, you just feel so sorry for the mom because she is just in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. She seems like a sweetheart. Both his parents are not really, they're super nice. They're sweet. And yeah, it's, and we find out a little more about them later. We'll talk about it. Yeah. It's like Dylan, the kid's mom is dead and the dad's in jail. So just kind of maybe breathe a sigh of relief that the kid's not yours, but you'll figure some shit out to, you know, to, so DJ's taken care of, but just chill out, dude. So we're back at Mayor's house. Mayor calls a family meeting in the dining room. Everybody's like, what's this?
Great scene.
Yeah, it's great. And you can tell that there's a little more levity when the score changes. I noticed that there's a couple, I think there's two moments at least, this scene and a later scene where the score kind of picks up. It has got more like fecundity, the energy and bounce to it. Drew is sitting at the table. She gives him some goldfish and his grandmother's iPad, great grandma's iPad, Helen's iPad, and sends him into Helen's room. And she's going to have a meeting with Helen and Siobhan. And they're just like, what's going on with a meeting? It's like, yeah, we're doing it, calling a meeting. And and she tells them about planting the heroin in Carrie's car. Helen yells at her. And she says they could lose Drew forever if Carrie could prove that she did it. Siobhan's like, yeah, what grandma said. And then Siobhan says, well, since we're talking, I've got to let you know I broke up with Becca. And I said, thank God that you did that, Siobhan. leave that stoner alone.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just not compatible. Like, Siobhan's in prep school. She's trying to, you know, get a good education. She's smart. She's going places. And
she's like responsible for everybody. Yeah. And then she has this relationship where she has to be responsible for her too.
Yeah. She's like second in charge of Drew, and she's a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, and she's going to what is a competitive school, like an elite prep school. So, you know, so because that's what Frank and Mayor want for her, you know. What else about this scene?
Well, I feel like this episode in general, from the beginning with the roasted chicken, I'm just falling so in love with Helen. You know, obviously I was already in love with Mayor, but Helen is just so funny.
Yeah.
And you know, with both of them with the family meeting, and then she just like lets her know. You know, she's like, goes in hard, like that was so stupid. And then she gets up and goes, but then she comes back to the table.
Mm-hmm. She calls it like a smacked ass or something. Like, it's like, I've never heard that before.
And then I felt like I could see Mayor being like, I'm going to try this, telling them what's happening.
Yes. Yeah.
So it was her being like, I don't even know how to do this, you know, but she sat down and she did it. And then she was trying to like take in the information. And then she said to both of them, do you have something that you want to share? So mm-hmm. I felt like this was her like first step into trying to be, you know, open and communicative.
Right.
And I felt like both her mom and daughter recognized that, even though they were appalled by her actions.
Right. Right. She's definitely taken in what the chief told her at the end of episode 3. And just like, yeah, like she's doing the right thing. Like I said, that everything before this episode is to set up her redemption. And it's more, it's about not necessarily the redemption of her as a detective, but her that as well, but her as a mother and a member of her family.
Yeah.
And she's trying to better herself. How about the lie? Siobhan's like, oh, did you meet anybody else? She's like, no. And then another lingering shot on her with her face looking all, nope, I haven't met anybody else.
Oh, yeah, about her. Yeah.
I didn't go to the Boy Genius show with Ann, the DJ, the college DJ. I wanted to say something. I forgot to say this last week. So I did talk about, we did talk about Boy Genius, the band, last week. And Phoebe Bridgers is a part of that band. And that band is very queer friendly. And I think Phoebe is queer. I don't know about all of there. At least two of the three are queer, and it's very queer friendly. And it reminded me of a time that I went to see one of my favorite singer songwriters in New York City at the Bowery Ballroom. Have you ever had one of those moments where you felt like where you're somewhere, not necessarily that you're not supposed to be there? And I'm not talking about racism or sexism, but it's just like, oh, this is a different crowd. You ever been felt like this is, I don't know. I'll tell you the story. One of my favorite singer-songwriters is Rachel Yamagata, brilliant singer-songwriter. I'd seen her before in Chicago years prior to that. And I had like a hosting, I had to host some shows at the Stand, but I could see this show. It was like a late night hosting spot at the Stand. And then I was at Bowery watching the show. I got a ticket. And this was just like this was like a super lesbian crowd. And they were like kind of staring at me. I was like, hey, I like the music, ladies. I can't, you know, whatever. I don't know. It just reminded me of that. It's like one of those cool New York nights. One of those cool and interesting New York nights where it was just like a mostly lesbian crowd. And I didn't know Rachel Yamagata got that draw because I've seen her in other venues, but it was just heavily lesbian. I don't know. I just thought I'd share that. You don't get that from at your LA Times podcast. They're not going to tell you that. They get the famous people to come on their show, but you don't get cool stories like that. All right, moving on. I want to talk to you about this. This is interesting here. This next scene. Mayor meets with the grief counselor, Dr. Gail Graham. And she says, you know, don't get discouraged if there's no breakthrough. She tells a story about a former partner who accidentally killed an old woman while he was on patrol, ran over or hit her or something. And he quit the force, took therapy. And he quit, and he's now like a park guide at Valley Forge. And she's like, so don't, you know, don't be mad if you don't get a hallelujah moment. And I want to know your thoughts on this, because this kind of seems out of character for Mayor in the way that, because she was making these strides in the previous scene and in the episode, in episode two, she's crying while she's talking to the pediatrician. You remember? And when
that, oh, yeah, I remember.
One of the best scenes in the show. And now she's like, oh, she's trying to take control over this. Like, oh, don't be surprised if, you know, you don't get a hallelujah moment, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, how did you feel about this scene?
Well, I thought it was, as somebody who goes to therapy, you know, she came in early, and the therapist woman was like, usually the therapist will come out and be like, I'm ready, you know, because they take time but Mayor is taking control of the meeting. And then you can see it switching when the therapist stands up and moves her over to the table. I mean, the chairs. But okay. I think that when Mayor comes in, basically she's doing this for her job.
Right.
She wants to get her job back. So she's like letting the therapist know, I'm going to show up. I'm going to do all the stuff, you know, and, you know, I assume you're going to tell them that I'm being cooperative, but, you know, don't expect anything big of me. I think that was her not moving backwards, but more of her doing like, I want to do what I have to do for my job. And I think she was also a little anxious. I don't think she wants to like have feelings around this lady in particular. So she goes in as the like, you know, person in charge, as she knows how to do. She walks in early. She sits down. She lets the lady know how it's going to go. You know what I mean? And then the therapist is like, okay, okay. And I thought the therapist did such a great job switching that balance of power when they moved over to those other seats. I also thought it was such a funny, when Mayor was telling the story about the guy, like her cadence was so funny because she was like, she was like, da da, she's like, that piece of shit. And just like ran through. And then when she's like, well, how did it go with your couples therapist? She's like, well, we're divorced. You know, I thought she was just trying to be, she was just sort of, I think, trying to be like, I'm going to do what I got to do to keep my job. And, but I'm not gonna, don't expect me to get like vulnerable. And I think she was doing that just because that's how she knows how to do things.
Mm-hmm. She's playing the opposites. Definitely. Like, I think, because of that scene, because of the way she was behaving in that scene, I think we're definitely going to get that. We're going to get a hallelujah moment.
I hope so. I loved when she sarcastically said, let the healing begin. And then the therapist, you know, I think that therapist is going to crack some of that shell.
Oh, yeah. Because she, the therapist was like, well, let's see, bitch.
Yeah.
Let's see what's up. I think she's going to get her to open up. And I think my early prediction is, I think they're gonna get Katie and this new girl back by end of the episode next week.
You think we're gonna get them back by end of next week's episode?
Yeah.
If not,
episode 6, because like I will say, the thing about this creator, Inglesby, yes, it's about whodunit. And we want all these, everything's going to be answered. But I think the thing that's more important is, to him at least, is the character, is Mayor. Yeah. So I think like it just made me think about The Way Back, the Ben Affleck movie that he wrote. You think it's about one thing, but it's about something else, because there's a moment where you think, oh, this is the movie moment and this is gonna it. And it happened. But then there's more, like there's right. like another like half hour. I was like, I looked at my watch. I was like, oh, it's still going. So I don't know, that maybe that's, I could be wrong, but I think
you're right on that. I think you're totally right.
I think within the next two episodes, we at least get these girls back. Okay. So that was my early thoughts on the early predictions. Zabel catches up with Deacon Mark at the local pharmacy. Deacon Mark's been avoiding his calls. He asks him about his reassignments, and we find out that there was a sexual misconduct with a 14-year-old girl. Zabel is right to be concerned. Deacon Mark gets spicy, and he's like, you got to talk to the archdiocese about that. And Zabel basically hems him up nicely by saying, hey, look, you need to get your story straight, because if I know already, people are going to know and the whole town is going to know. So you need to get your story straight. And that, you know, like, he's the dude that's going to get pressed. Your thoughts on this?
Well, I actually, in that scene, I actually wrote down, if anything is suspicious, if anything is, I don't know what I wrote there, but I meant like bad with Colin Zabel, I'm going to be so upset, just because I think he's like just the sweetest and so well-intentioned. And if there's some kind of like 180 on his character, I'm going to be like, no,
I'm going to be mad too. But I don't think he had anything to do with those girls.
I don't think so either. I really hope not. I mean, it would much really bigger be than a trick.
Whoever that, no, that dude, that the dude,
that dude that, was way bigger than him.
Yeah. It's not Zabel.
And then I also, you know, in the beginning, I thought that the deacon was the dad.
Mm-hmm.
That was my, and then the more that it seems like they're pushing us that way, the more I'm like, well, maybe it's not. Do you know what I mean?
It's just,
maybe it's Billy. You know what I mean? Because the more they're like over here, the more I'm like, oh, is this a setup?
Yeah. It's almost like you kind of have to be. I still think after watching this, I still think your theory's right. I mean, you just have to be resolute, because as it gets deeper and deeper into it, you do start to see more red herrings and more suspects. And it's like, it tries to make you second guess yourself a little bit, but that's the most like on point thing that I've heard. And I've kind of scoured YouTube and other, you know, recaps, just reading what other people say. And I haven't seen anybody say that Deacon Mark was the dad, except you. I personally haven't seen anything.
The other thing I thought of, and I'm jumping ahead for a second, but we have mentioned that the guy with the van is a big man, and this is mm-hmm. just a possibility. He also has a lot of hair. That's mm-hmm. the other thing. Because we saw from the back through the shoulder, is that if it was the deacon and he was putting girls who were on this website in this place, it could be some like religious thing where he's trying to make them stop being prostitutes. It could be some other kind of angle.
Yeah, that's true. Or it's like, go ahead.
No, but I mean, I'm just like throwing out all these, you know what I mean? Sure. Options.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you could be right. I mean, it's just that they threw a lot of stuff at us this week. I saw where the AV Club said that this was a bloated episode. I don't think so. I just think things are coming to a head. We've got three more episodes left after this.
Well, and also last episode was like a slower, you know, and mm-hmm. things just went wrong. So they had to cram a whole lot in. Also, I don't think Deacon Mark was actually there when Katie Bailey went missing.
Probably not.
So I just wanted to say that I threw that out there, and well, then I take it back entirely. I don't think
he's the van driver. No, he was there for a while, at least a year or two, at least a couple of years.
Oh, because he was there before Aaron got pregnant.
Yeah, so he's been there for a minute. It just none of his shit came into question, because a lot of these priests, it happens where they just move to another town.
Yeah.
After some bullshit happens.
Greg Giraldo had the greatest joke about that. I loved his album, Good Day to Cross a River. And he talks a lot about Catholicism. And then he talks about how they're like, it's not his fault. The priest is in a parish with a lot of hot kids. Just move him to a parish with less hot kids.
The great Greg Giraldo. Yeah, I mean, I came up in the Catholic Church, and a lot of the tenets are great, but the kid shit kind of just took me away from it. I you know, I was like in my mid to late 20s before I stopped going. You know, treating people right, all that good stuff, do unto others, it works, but this kid shit is like you keep hiding these people. It's fucked up. Okay. And maybe it is like a treatise on the church, but it's seven episodes, and I think the last episode is called Sacrament. I mean, something's they're dealing with the church, you know what I mean? It's something about it. Seven. Okay. Yeah, so get your shit together, Deacon Mark. Next scene, Mayor goes for a walk with Richard at the college. He talks about teaching after she asks him about teaching, and he's saying, I had one book in me, and that's okay. He kind of talks about that a lot, you know, that he just did that one book, but it's like, dude, you did something cool. Now maybe you can teach people, you can help people. But then he asks her about Carrie. She tells her that she fucked it up. And he basically says, hey, do you ever give yourself a break? You're carrying a lot of heavy stuff. Does anybody ever do anything for you? And he tells her Saturday is his birthday. He doesn't know what he's going to do, but he's going to pick her up at 7 and surprise her with the location. She doesn't really say yes. She just kind of takes it in. And she does that twice in this episode where.
Yeah, she does.
She's like, I love the looks that she has where she's just like getting this attention. I like this attention. Your thoughts, Leah?
Well, I think, and you brought this up before, that this character, he in many ways peels away at her vulnerabilities,
mm-hmm.
by being he's so self-aware. And yeah. Like he said, I only had that one book. And then he said, now, and she, when she says, what do you think of teaching? And he says, I used to think that people who taught were people who couldn't do the things that they wanted to do. So at least it's a good reminder to me that I'm failing or whatever. And, but he says it like very lighthearted, and she makes a joke, you know, good to catch you on the way down then. So yeah. I feel like he's very comfortable with where he feels he's at. And mm-hmm. then she compliments him, which was, you know, I feel like she's being more and more kind. Oh, like we know because we love her that yeah. inside she's a fierce protector and lover of people, but she doesn't often show it. So she gives him a compliment. And then I think you're right. She, you know, he asked her, well, that was a nice thing he said about, you know, he says intuitive things to her about, does anybody ever help you? You know, you're carrying so much.
Mm-hmm. And he is an artist. He's an artist. So we, you know, he understands, you know, he's connecting with her in a way that she probably isn't used to.
Yeah. She doesn't seem to have people like that, that sort of speak like that in her life.
Right.
To her.
Yeah. So next scene, Dawn is at work. She's at the gas station. She's counting money at the register. And it's basically you're holding your thing, and we're kind of, you know, trying to see like, oh, is she going to steal the money? And then we cut to her at Beth's house. Yeah, it's Beth's house. And she tells Beth about the caller, possible kidnapper, ransom deal. Beth says, you know, Beth thinks it's a scam and that she should just tell Mayor about it. And she says, well, and then here comes a small town gossip bullshit. She tells Beth Mayor isn't working anymore because she had a breakdown. She ran into Jan Kelly at Kmart and she still told her, you know, she told her about it. And Dawn kind of feels like, oh, is this partly because of me? And she says, well, look, Beth says, basically, you do what any mother would do. You know, don't beat yourself up over it. Then we see Freddie walk by. He's been living in the basement for the past few days because he overdosed on Friday in front of DeSanto's deli. And the police showed up and like brought him back from the dead, resuscitated him. And it's ruining her marriage with Terrence. I didn't get an audition to play Terrence. a little frustrated with that. You know, she feels comfortable because Freddie's at the house and she knows he's not out in the street. So she feels comfortable that he's there, even though it's tearing her marriage apart. Good scene. Good to see like Dawn not being angry and interacting with somebody. Obviously, they're former teammates, you know.
I knew that you were going to bring up the small town gossip Kmart thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how it's so like that's how we talk in our town. Like I heard our town, the nearest Kmart was like 35 to 40 minutes away. So I thought, it was very nice. It showed their friendship.
Yes. Yeah.
It also showed like every character is being pulled in so many ways. Like here's Dawn. She is in cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. She's looking for her daughter. She feels guilty about Mayor. She wants to know what's going on with this phone call. And then here's her friend Beth, who cares about her friend, is trying to keep, you know, she's making dinner for her family. She's worried that having her brother at the house is hurting her marriage. Then she's clearly worried about her brother because he OD'd. You know, everybody's got so many, and it's their vulnerabilities. And they're trying to, at the same time, just keep moving and then also take care of each other in the ways that they can.
And that's true. I mean, that's most people in America. You know what I mean? I think it's just so real that you just kind of, yes, the show's focusing on Mayor because it's Mayor of Easttown. But I think I love how the show is just kind of giving you these snapshots and this rich inner life of all the supporting characters, all the other players in the show. And it's just kind of like a microcosm of society and America. You know, they just have long O's. They just say home and water, you know, it's just that's so it's like really real that I love that. You know, we talked about that in the first episode of our pod, just about the way that they capture this humanity in these people. So I thought that was a good scene, it's like a transitional scene, but we get Dawn isn't just the angry mom whose daughter is missing and has cancer, you know, and it gives more credence and more weight to her standing up to D'Alessandro, Brianna's dad.
I don't think the name is D'Alessandro because that's my name.
Really?
Yeah. I think
it's not D'Alessandro.
No, that's my family name.
And that wasn't Oh shit. Now we got to look for this. Delot Brianna. What is Brianna's name? Oh shit. You know what I could do? I could go to can you vamp while I'm looking this up?
Yeah, we can absolutely vamp. I could always vamp, but now that you're saying that, I'm like, could I vamp?
You're like, oh shit.
What I think's happening also, and that's what was going on with Deacon Mark and everybody, is that now there's so many things happening that we're like second guessing our initial gut feelings because there's so many things happening.
De La Rosso, is that it?
I think it's De La Rosso.
De La Rosso. Okay. I just want to confirm that. I was trying to find that page that I was looking, but yeah, keep going. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, my family name is D'Alessandro. So like anytime I hear, you know, the D'Alessandros, I'm like, I know them. They are out of Delaware County, so it's possible, but.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. You did say that. We're trying to find this. Brianna. They just have so many of these.
Sorry, what I also noticed, like with Dawn and Beth and all, everybody's like so strong. They're all shouldering so much.
Yeah.
And they're just like just getting through their day, you know?
Del Rosso. Okay, there we go. I just like to get the character names and shit right. Some people were fucking up. You know how like there's people that are more famous than us on this shit? They fuck up the name of this woman, Missy Sager, this new missing girl that we'll find out about in a bit. They call her Sayer, but on the show they call her Sager. We'll get to it. Yeah, but that was a good scene. I like that.
Yeah, it's like everybody's just trying to do their best.
Mm-hmm. Trying to get by, just like Talib Kweli. Okay, so. This is another good scene. This is kind of like, and I want your thoughts on this after we get through these next two scenes. So Carrie brings Drew to her new apartment. It's kind of in the hood on the more seedier side of town. And she brought him a projector for the stars that he likes. And they have pizza. One interesting thing that Drew didn't take off his hat. You know, he didn't seem like he was at home. I'm making air quotes. So the next cut is, wait a minute. Yeah, do I want to do? You want to do those together? What did you think about that scene? Let's just talk about that scene.
Well, you know, you can feel that she's, you know, really trying hard to make a home. And this is obviously her first apartment, but right. He's been living in a house where he feels he's got his room set up. He feels safe. People are arguing. Yeah, and the walls are thin. Mm-hmm. And like you said, he doesn't take his hat off. But right away when he walks in, he clearly doesn't feel it's one room. And I think he doesn't want to make his mom feel bad because he's like, oh, this is like, he's aware. He's a child that's like aware enough of everybody's feelings where he doesn't want to say anything. And then she's like, sit on the bed. And you can tell when he sits on the bed, he's like, ugh. You know what I mean? And she's trying so hard. And even though we don't like her because she, but there's still, you feel that for her that she's trying to make it work. Yeah. And then she's like, I got pizza. And you know, Drew's like, I'll give it a shot. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? He's clearly trying, but he's like, I don't know about this place.
It's crazy that kids that are like 4 or 5 years old are that perceptive, but they are.
Oh, for sure.
They definitely are.
They're like magnets for everything around them. That's how people learn. Your brain is still forming.
Yeah. And then so we switch to the next scene is Mare at home looking at videos of Aaron on Instagram. She's checking out her social media. There's a video that she lands on with Aaron talking about being a mom and how hard it is and everything like that. She feels like a bad mother. Obviously, Mare can relate. Then we get this great flashback. The transition, the editing on this is just superb, where it just throws us right into this flashback where Kevin and Carrie are, when they were addicts, going through Mare's pocketbook, trying to get money. Kevin is yelling, telling Mare that he hates her. He pushes her down in the bathroom, and Kevin runs out, and Carrie calls Mare a stupid fucking bitch, and Mare is crying. She's like, oh my yeah. God, Kevin. And we've never seen her that vulnerable. And it's just like a really sad scene. And this pissed me off because I was like, where the fuck was Frank? You're not afraid to talk about our son, but where the fuck were you at, dog? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where were you? Like, even though Kevin was addicted to drugs, where was Frank jacking his little ass up?
Right.
That made me angry because we love Mare so much. Yes, she's flawed, but that immediately made me think, like, where the fuck were you, Frank? You know, all high and mighty, kind of. Even though he was a good cop, he wasn't around. He wasn't around then. Where was he?
Well, and Mare never says to people like, I, you know, that's like, they're both standing over her. She gets pushed behind the toilet and they're standing over her. It's very like, it feels scary.
It is scary.
And, you know, she never says to people, everybody's like, oh, he killed himself. And, you know, everybody comes down on her. And it's like, she obviously was like taking shit too. And she doesn't, you know, obviously this was all triggered by her watching Aaron's video where Aaron said, I just want him to have a good life. And mm-hmm. I feel like I was a bad mom. And then she remembers that scene. And also, like, you can see where her, like, real hatred of Carrie comes from.
Yes. And why she did what she did.
Yeah, because even she's though, really horrible.
Yeah, even though it was wrong and she shouldn't have done it. But we know we get why.
Yeah.
And so we come out of that flashback and there's a knock on the door. Carrie brings Drew home because Drew couldn't sleep and he missed his turtle, Kevin. And Carrie tells Mare after she takes his hat off. Drew runs upstairs, goes to bed. And Carrie says, you know, I know it was you that planted the drugs. Mare's like, oh, what are you talking about? What do you mean? And she's like, look, I'm trying really hard to get my life back. Please don't do this anymore. Please don't. Just please help me out. You know, don't do this anymore. Yeah. Your thoughts, Leah, what do you think?
Well, good on Carrie for actually bringing him back when he wasn't happy or comfortable or sleeping well, because like you would hope that she would recognize that, you know, he is more comfortable, like let him slowly transition into being both places. Like Mare was like, let him finish out the school year. You know, I was glad that she brought him home mm-hmm. when he was upset. And I felt like this was a little bit of Mare was polite, you know what I mean? And there was that scene where she sort of, after Carrie went away, she sort of looked at her through the screen. I almost thought for a second she was going to say, do you want to come in? But obviously she didn't. But it felt like it was movement. You know what I mean? It felt like Carrie recognized that Dylan wanted to be, not Dylan.
Drew.
Drew wanted to be there. And there's so many children's names with D in this.
I know there are a lot.
Dylan, yeah. DJ. And they both had that moment of sharing that they wanted Drew to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you hope that maybe they can overcome, even though I hate Carrie so much for the way she behaved. Even though like what Mare did was horrible, I can forgive Mare. that they can overcome this by both of their shared love for Drew.
Yeah. Yeah. Great acting from Sosie Bacon. Yeah, it was a great scene. Next scene is DJ crying in the hospital with Dylan. Dawn was not there. because of all the D's.
Of all the D's, I was like, was Dawn there before?
No. I was just
Dawn, Donna.
She did it. He's annoyed that, you know, he's so annoyed that this kid is like crying in his little jungle. What do you call that? His crib.
In his jungle. His jungle gym.
His crib. And he's annoyed, and it looks like he's gonna smother this kid.
Oh, it totally does.
I'm like, what the fuck? And then he picks him up. Baby stops crying. Dylan's mom is looking through the window, the little blinds and whatnot, and sees it. She smiles, I guess, kind of. I think she smiles a little bit. Her heart is warmed by it. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that scene was very like, I was like, oh, he's going to hurt this child.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, he just got shot. You know what I mean? He's been shot. He's in physical pain. You know, obviously when we first meet him, he's such a dick. So yeah. It's hard to have empathy for him, but he has been shot. You know what I mean? He found out that he's not the father. And then it looks like he's just so mad at that kid because he's being loud and he's trying to sleep and it's, you know, it's not his kid. And then, it switches and you can see he clearly has love for the kid. And then his mom, obviously, who wants it all to be okay, witnesses that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of told you that he's like changing a little bit. I don't think he's going to be a saint, but he's just kind of like, him being shots humbled him a bit. But then in the episode 5 teaser, maybe not so much. All right.
I didn't see the teaser. What does he do?
He rolls up on Jess and he's like, the three of us are connected with this. Get in the car. Some shit happens to Jess Ryan. Is it Jess Ryan?
She's holding some shit back.
We'll get to her. Cut to this girl in a van who we find out is Missy Sager. For some reason, everybody on the internet's calling her Sayer, but in the fucking show, they call her Sager, Missy Sager. I don't know what that is. IMDb calls her Missy Sayer, but if Zabel calls her Sager and everybody on the fucking TV show calls her Sager, there's a picture of her on the news and on the show that they call her Sager. She's fucking Missy Sager. We're getting this shit right. All right. I just felt like I had to say that with all these fucking shows with these listens and high profile guests. All right. I'm getting angry. Cut to a girl talking about Disney World, going to Disney World for the first time when she was 10. Was it like Magic Mountain or something? Like her and her sister just kept.
Yeah, they just kept riding that one.
And the dad got pissed and he was like, why don't you ride something else? Spending all this money. And she seems like she's a prostitute and the van stops. She takes off some of her top And she says, have you guys not done this before? And then this dude is strangling her. And we find out later that she's Missy Sager. And this is intercut with Mayor and Helen watching a news story about this Missy Sager girl being gone missing for 3 days. She left home on Thursday night, her dad says, around 7 p.m. Helen thinks it might be a serial killer. This is the third girl. They say, I think they said in the news story, like Gone Girl number 3 or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's later into the show, but
no, I think it's there.
Oh, it's on that one. And then so Mayor gets up to leave and puts her coat on. And Helen's like, hey, where are you, you know, come on, where are you going? And Mayor's like, Mayor asks Helen, you know, if she's ever listened to anything that she's ever said. Helen just says, look, I just wanted you to get the popcorn out of the microwave before you leave. And she's like, oh, okay. Throws the popcorn at her because it's hot. And that's the scene. That's like a little levity to that dark moment of this woman getting choked out. Any thoughts on that, Leah?
Well, just to add to what you said earlier about how every character in this is so real. Just when Missy was in the van with the horrible man, just when she said that thing about how she hates the cold, mm-hmm. and she didn't realize there was a place where it wouldn't be cold when she was little until she went to Florida. Like, that's just so, as somebody from the North, like it's just such like a nice detail, because that's like so real.
It's great fucking character work. It's like, that's a great monologue. It's just a great monologue. It's just like, you're telling this story because people do that. Like because she's trying to connect with this dude. Or
like break the ice,
If I'm going to be going down on you, hey, here's a story about Disney World or whatever.
Before I put my fucking Altoid in.
Yeah, exactly. What place did they drive by? What is that place? Like, they show that establishing shot. Is it like a refinery or something, or like a factory?
I don't know. Is it by Benny's Tavern when he pulls her in there, or is it past there?
Well, that's before, but like,
it's before, but I don't know if it's in the same area.
Like, they're driving on the highway and like there's steam coming out like this, like some type of factory or something, right? They've got
they're on an off-road.
Yeah. But you saw the stuff with the steam going down, you know. Never mind. Maybe that's.
I don't think I was focusing on that.
Okay, that's. It was just an establishment.
I would think I was thinking this girl's about to get murdered.
Well, I was thinking that too, but I was just wondering because you see those places, like, I don't know what they are, like what type of factory is it, or I was just wondering.
Oh, and then the scene where I thought that was like more with Mayor is obviously going to go back out and start looking into these cases.
Oh, yeah.
When they see the news, and her mom is, you know, she's ready for her mom to try to stop her. And that's why she says, have I ever listened to you? And her mom's like, I just want the popcorn.
Yeah. Don't try to stop me, mom. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they go through the hot popcorn thing, which is funny. And then, you know, her mom makes that funny face again. That's such a great character.
Jean Smart, I think Jean Smart, she's great in everything she's been in, but like, I'm wondering, depending on how this show turns out, she's going to get she could get a supporting actor.
But yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. She's got a show on coming out this week on HBO called Hacks.
Oh, Hacks. That's on, yeah.
And she's playing like this aging comedian. And she hired, like, she's trying to be hip, so she hires like a TV writer, this young woman, to help her with her act. So that I'm gonna check it out when it comes out this weekend. Looks good. All right.
Yeah, it does look good.
We cut to Zabel at his mom's house. I guess he still lives with his mother. They're eating dinner. They're about to eat dinner. She thinks, you know, they're talking about Mayor. She thinks Mayor's in over her head and that they're lucky to have him on the force. Zabel's like, hey, you know, I think she's a good detective. They've underestimated how hard that case is. You know, he's basically defending her. He's drinking a Yingling. They say grace. There's a knock on the door. Or doorbell rings, and it's Mayor. Mayor comes in. He introduces Mayor by saying, "This is my mayor." I mean, Detective Mayor Sheehan, and they introduce, and she's like, "Oh, we were just talking about you. You want some dinner? We got enough, so much food." And she's like, "No." And Zabel asks if she wants a beer. They have a Yingling. It's the first time that Mayor does not have a Rolling Rock on the show. So we find that she's a Yingling kind of girl also. So they sit down, and it's funny because they show this cut of Zabel's mom at the table with glasses on, just kind of staring Mayor down.
Yeah.
Like really intensely. And Mayor just looks up at her and it's just like, "Oh, hey, whatever." And we find out about this missing woman, young woman. Missy Sager graduated at the top of her class at Sun Valley High School. She's in a gymnastics, field hockey, student council, enrolled in the nursing program at Kutztown University. Freshman year, she's crossing the street. She gets hit by an old lady, fractures her hip, and then she turns to oxy and then morphine, and you know the rest. Phone was shut off at 2:23 a.m. on Friday. She signed up on this prostitution website called Side Door. And she had no contact with her mom, dad, or sister or friends since her phone was cut off on Friday at 2 a.m. So they continue talking. Hauser, the new assistant, his assistant on the case, doesn't think that Missy Sager's case is related to Aaron's case. But maybe Katie's case. Hauser was, we find out officially that Hauser was Zabel's PT instructor. And for graduation, all six of the graduates each took a shit in his trunk. So this guy is not well liked. And Mayor asks, you know, what he thinks about the case. And he says, you know, their lifestyles were too different. Katie and Missy were drug abusers, and they turned to prostitution to supply their drug habit. And they signed that they had side door accounts. And there was no evidence to support that Aaron was into prostitution. And Mayor says she could have been because we'll get to that. She could have been. We know she needed the money for her son's ear surgery. She made two appointments with the ENT and canceled them both. If you're a mother with a kid that needs surgery and you got a dad like Kenny, you're not going to have the side door account on your own computer. Teenage girls are fucking sneaky, is what Mayor says. Zabel asks if she wants to tell him the reason she got put on leave, the real reason. And we cut to another cut to Judy being nosy as fuck. And Mayor says, one day, you know, she says, right now, I just want to drink these beers and figure out how to find these girls. Your thoughts on this is where we get like a big, huge chunk of information, big, huge chunk of exposition.
Yeah, I thought it was, I also thought it was like a really funny way to open the scene and give us all we need to know about his mother's character with that she's using an electric carving knife in the opening scene. You know what I mean? Because like, when do you see those?
My parents have one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's old. It's old. I think it's, you know, I don't know if you ever had this, but like my mother would say stuff like, "Oh, this thing is older than you. This,
yeah,
this lamp is older than you." So I think they have an electric knife that they pull out during the holidays that's older than me.
Well, this is my first time seeing one in a very long time. And when I do see them, I usually see them being used on like a ham or yes, a full-size turkey. And this absolutely was like on a Cornish game hen. It was like something, you know what I mean? It was like on something very small. And you're like, which is why I sort of got the idea that he didn't always live with her. You know what I mean? I kind of felt like maybe he came to live with her for this case.
I think you're right. I think that's a good point. That's a very good point. Yeah.
because she talks about him like he's not always there, where they're lucky to have you. And you also get, she's very like, you know, she loves the gossip. She loves that people in town are saying that her son is doing a great job. And then that's such a great moment when Mayor comes to the door and he says, "My mayor."
Yes.
And then catches himself, but both the ladies
got it.
You know, yeah, got it.
Yeah. I get why he's into her. I mean, do you want to talk about that now or later?
I know. I totally get it. You know, it's such a decision for her.
Yeah, because, you know, I've heard people say, well, he's a detective like her dad was. And maybe Richard loses points for being treating her shitty at that party.
Well, they're two totally different kinds of men.
Yeah. He's younger and looks up to her.
Yeah, he's younger. He looks up to her. They're sharing the experience of this job together, which is something that she loves so much. I think she appreciates his integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And like she bosses him around and he works hard. You know what I mean? He doesn't talk back at her. You know what I mean? He seems to be dedicated to making the relationship work. Also, he doesn't like, he wants to know why she got let go. And she actually, you got the idea that she might be willing to tell him one day. She wasn't totally closed off to it, but she's like right now. And he welcomes her back into the case because she knows how to do this. And right away, she's like, let's not disregard that maybe this girl had a past as well on this website because, you know, so she again shows her acumen at this.
Yes. Yeah. You took the word right out of my mouth. Acumen. Yeah. I was going to say that too. Yeah. We clearly see her detective brain at work and that, you know, we come to find out that she's, you know, she's right. So we cut to our friend, Jess Riley's house, who just the keeper of all fucking secrets.
Keeper of all secrets.
Just every fucking episode. Jess, come on, just fucking let it all out.
And we know there's more in there. There's another one in there.
Because she was making a face. We'll get to it, though. Yeah. The faces. Cut to Jess Riley's house. And, you know, they ask, why would Aaron lie to Dylan about being the father? And Jess said Dylan's parents were good people. Aaron wanted Dylan to pay for the ear surgery. She's holding back. She wanted, you know, it's like you said earlier, she knew that they would have love for her, love for the baby. And the baby would be taken care of. So Jess is still holding back. And Mayor asks, how was she planning to get the money for her kid's surgery? And Jess said she signed Aaron up for a side door account. Bingo! On her computer. Aaron could never bring herself to do it. That's what Jess says. Then they get she gives Mayor the login and the password. And then Mayor and Zabel are walking out. Mayor says, oh, shit. I left my phone in the apartment. So she goes back up and goes back up to the apartment. Jess asked. She asked Jess about her journals. And Jess is wearing a Spyro the Dragon shirt, which is a video game character for PlayStation. Anyway. she asks, and I didn't know kids still played that. Okay. She tells her where Aaron's journals are. She comes back out, tells Zabel to get a search warrant for side door. They'll tell him that it takes 5 days. He said, you tell him it, we need it by tomorrow. Zabel asks what she's doing on Saturday. And Mayor's like, are you asking me on a date, Zabel? And he's like, yeah, only if you say yes. He says, you know, my friend's got a buddy of mine's got a new restaurant in Kennett Square that he wants to try out. And so Mary has like a little smirk on her face. She's like, two possible dates. Why do you think? And then Jess is making a suspicious face looking at them through her window.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask you this. Why did she lied? Why did Mare lie to Zabel and tell her that she left her phone up there?
Because I think he wouldn't want her to go back to the crime scene because she's off the case and she could get in trouble.
Okay, there you go.
That's what I think. Do you think something different?
I like that. No, I literally wanted to know. I just wanted to know what you thought. I was like, oh yeah, I know it's something that she's keeping from him, but I just didn't know what, and that probably is it. Yeah, okay. I agree with you. Okay, another Deacon Mark scene. Cut to
the church. Can I just say something really quick? That A, Jess is still hiding stuff. We get why. She's a teenager. She doesn't want to get in trouble. She's trying to keep her friend's secrets. There's probably something else there that we're going to find out. Her mom, if I had been signing my friends up for websites and holding all this stuff back, I feel like my mom would be not happy with me. Her mom's just like, tell them. You know what I mean? My mom would be like, you're going up in the attic for 3 years.
I'm sure the conversation after they left was like, bitch, what the fuck are you doing? I'm sure she got it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we don't know. See, like, we know about Don and we know about Beth. We don't know what Miss Mama Riley is dealing with. She's probably a single mother, I believe.
Yeah, we never see a dad.
We never see a dad. And, you know, she probably has a long leash. And I bet she won't after this. You know, being her fucking Squarespace for her.
Yeah, these are all like, these are all high school girls that are.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, another thing that I didn't point out that I will now, and I'm glad that you brought it up. Mara was telling her, like, look, Aaron's gone. I know you want to protect her, but she's gone. So if you got anything you can tell me, please tell me. Tell me what's good. Tell me what's up. We cut to the church. Father Hastings comes to Deacon Mark's room. He says, hey, look, man, I got questioned by a journalist from the Tribune, and they're going to write an article about, you know, your transfer. The parish basically telling him essentially the same thing that Zabel told him. You know, they're going to write an article. The parishioners are going to find out about you. I'm trying to protect my parishioners. I need to know, you know, what's going on here. And then and then Mark is like, oh, do you think I'm lying to you? Like, yeah, motherfucker. So but it's so weird that Father Hastings just like leaves, like he's walking on eggshells around Deacon Mark.
Was hoping that Deacon Mark was going to give up some information or like communicate about it. Instead of doing that, Deacon Mark's like, well, would you not believe me?
Yeah.
So he doesn't really give him anywhere to go.
So weird. Like, why are you walking on eggshells, dude? It's your church.
I think he's going to go look him up. I think he's going to do something.
Yeah. He's probably going to go to mayor or something. So we're back at the radio. We're at the radio station again at the college. Anne asks, you know, so she's like, Siobhan's working on the documentary. Anne asks Siobhan about the documentary. She's trying to understand why Kevin killed himself. And she says, oh, were you guys close? And she said, yeah, sometimes I felt like he was my best friend. Other times I felt like I didn't even know him. And his death tore their family apart. They didn't get through it. You know, Anne's like, man, at least you guys got through it. She said, no, we didn't. You know, it tore our family apart. And she says, oh, is that why you want to stay in town for college? And then Anne tells her that you can't live your life for anyone else. You got to live your life for yourself. So that means like they've been talking for a while. Like Siobhan has expressed, you know, her situation to Anne.
Well, I also think Anne is very perceptive because she's the first person who has out loud said to Siobhan, like, obviously you feel responsible for holding this whole family up.
Right.
Which we as the viewers can see, but it hasn't been brought up.
Yeah.
I also hope that with this documentary and with some of the memories and whatever happens at the end, that we get more clarity on Kevin's suicide, because I think it's going to be more complicated.
Yeah. Might have just been we don't know. I mean, everybody would know what an overdose is, but it's just weird that No, he went away for at least that.
He was at the beach because she had sent her that video.
Yeah. 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 Mental illness, all that tied into it. Yeah. So we cut to a scene where the score changes and it's a little more pleasant. Helen is at home. She goes to the freezer. Pulls out a bag of mixed vegetables and to reveal a quart of Häagen-Dazs inside. A pint of Häagen-Dazs. Why is she hiding that?
Oh, because she's hiding it so other people don't eat it.
Oh, okay, because yeah,
so Mary, it's like her special treat.
Okay. I was thinking like she's trying to be healthy or something, but yeah. No. In that house, people will fuck that shit up. They would eat that. Yeah, Mary would have eaten it. Yeah, totally. Okay. That's what I wanted to know. So she hears a knock on the door. She's like, oh shit. And then she hides it in the bread basket, like the bread. I don't know. She hides it in somewhere else. Somebody knocks at the door. It's Becca. And Becca's upset about the breakup. She claims that, you know, she's just, Siobhan was so great. Best thing that ever happened to her. She's crying. And she claims that, you know, Siobhan was out shopping and was going to come back. Told her to meet her at the house or something. And Helen tells her to go downstairs.
Helen's just so believing and trying to be helpful.
Yeah. So then we cut to, it's intercut with Helen and Anne coming back from somewhere. She's driving her home. Siobhan and Anne are driving back from a date. She drops Siobhan off. They kiss in the driveway. She says, hey, let's go inside. They kiss in the car. Then Siobhan's like, let's go inside. And then they're making out, kissing and get hot and steamy. And then we see Becca on the couch listening to her headphone music and from her headphones. Becca looks up, sees Anne and Siobhan making out. She starts screaming like she's in a horror movie. And Siobhan goes after her. Becca runs through the door. Helen's seat is like, what's going on? Helen gets knocked down by Becca coming out of the house, coming out of the basement. She says, I'm sorry, and just runs out of the house.
Runs away.
From a concussed Helen. And they call the ambulance. And then Mayor comes home and she sees cops and the ambulance medics all over the place. And she's like, she says, where is it at? Mayor comes home to find the medics and the police tending to Helen, and Mayor's like, that's it. And then Helen says, I'm sorry, I'm not more maimed for you. and Mayor gets in the ambulance with Helen. That's nice.
Yeah, her mother. I thought that was a big scene where she's like, do you want me to get in? And her mom's like, I guess. And then
they do it. It seems like their dad was the emotional one, the caring, like the physically, possibly he was more affectionate, maybe. What do you think?
Well, she definitely said he was my best friend, talking about her dad in the other episode. And I also think that this family probably got a little broken. And so what they were previously, I'm not, you know, but right now they're like edging back in. They're like slowly putting their feet in the water of being tender to each other.
You said water. You meant water.
Water. They're slowly putting their feet in the water.
There we go. It was a nice little moment. And but before Mary gets in the ambulance, she's like, who's that woman with Siobhan? It's not like girl. She's like, who's that woman? And she says, it's Becca. She's like, no, that's not Becca, that's a woman. And she's like, it's a friend. And she's like, oh, hi, friend. Yeah, like Siobhan could say, it's Anne. This is Anne. Why couldn't she just say, hey, this is I don't know. It's a lot happening. Yeah. So we get we're back with the next scene. Don gets a call from somebody, the possible kidnapper. And the kidnapper says, the person on the other end of the phone says, Katie's daughter's middle name is Grace. She has a tattoo of her birth date on her ankle. Do you believe me now, Don? 5,000 by tomorrow night. If you go to the police, all you ever find is of Katie are her bones. And then Don's like, fuck. She walks into the house. Next scene, Mayor goes to Aaron's house to look for the journal. Excuse me. She finds a golden heart necklace that reads 5/29/17. What do you make of that?
Well, I had to rewind that scene because I thought the man on the phone said she has an anklet with her birth date on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I immediately made that into the anklet.
Okay.
But then I rewound it and then I was like, oh, it was an ankle tattoo.
Yeah.
But I had already in my mind decided that that was Bailey's anklet. Because that's not her birthday. She was born in 2018.
Yeah, because DJ is about two. DJ's about two. Drew is at least four or five. Kenzie is about four or five, maybe. I'm just throwing out the little shorties, little kids. I don't know.
Oh, 2017. Obviously, it can't be her anklet because she would be. But for some reason, I immediately associated it with her because they just said ankle and birth date. You know what I mean? And then so I immediately somehow associated it with the girl who's gone missing, even though it's too young to be her.
Right. Yeah.
I guess it could be her son.
I guess. I mean, we'll find out.
Well, then why would she hide it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's weird. You got to think maybe this was like 2019. They started shooting this early. The pandemic got them, but they were shooting early 2020.
Well, Ann Harris's registration on the car of her window says 2019.
Okay. Who's Ann Harris? Oh, yeah. The girlfriend.
So that would make a 2-year-old. So I guess it could be her son's.
There you go. Boom.
But I don't know why she would hide that.
Detective Leah. I don't know. That's weird, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's gonna, you know, immediately you're like, what am I missing? Where did this come from? Why are there more questions?
Great fucking catch by you on Anne's registration on her.
This week I was like, where am I supposed to get my registration here? With my own panic. I was like, look, she's registered.
Well, it worked for this too. See? Okay. So we cut to Don again, back at work, possibly contemplating stealing money from the gas station. And then we cut to Lori's house. This is what I was texting you about. We cut to Lori's house. They see the stories about the missing girl. Ryan Ross is Lori's son. And he walks in on Lori and John. Yeah, John. Lori and John, they're cuddled up. And he's like, what are they saying now? And he's making a suspicious face that they hold on to in a close-up. Lori says, it's more stuff. Lori, and she doesn't want them walking home from school tomorrow. Their dad's going to pick them up. Then it's playing cut to... the news story playing at the rest of the news story playing at Mayor's house. The chief hasn't said that the three cases were, he hasn't confirmed that the three cases were connected. Mayor goes into Helen's room to check on her. That's another sign of her. She's like, well, the doctor said, you know, I got to check on you. So I'm just trying to see. She's eating potato chips. I was trying to see what potato chips she was eating. I couldn't tell if they were like hers potato chips or something. I would think they would be, but I couldn't tell. And so Helen is okay. You know, she's feeling better. And she says, well, can you look after Drew on Saturday? Cause I have a date. And she's, oh my God. Helen's like, oh my God, with the writer. And she says, I don't know yet. And I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, oh shit.
So she's considering.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the episode 5 teaser that you don't watch, Mare is looking gussied up at dinner in a restaurant with Zabel. But we don't know, you know, Zabel doesn't seem too pleased about something that Mare said. But like I said before, they could just be celebrating the fact that they figured out the case.
I also just feel bad because it's that guy's birthday. You know what I mean? You want him. It's his birthday. I feel like.
He'll get over it.
No, you're right. You're right. I love Zabel. I don't know if they're an appropriate relationship.
You think you said it's not appropriate?
No, I don't know if they are.
I'm just saying
because they're such a good working relationship. Yeah. But he seems like a really good man.
I've dated people that I've worked with.
I mean, it happens. You have shared.
Shared experience. I mean, I mean, if I was in his position, I would be into her.
I'm into her and I'm not even in his position. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would be like, cause that's attractive. A woman with authority that knows her shit and is good at her job. All right.
You brought it up, but also that was just more of that really cute mother daughter.
Yes.
With her checking in on her and then like being kind of ornery about it, but then obviously like still being like, I'm just doing it. But you know, it's just really, it's the cute, the cracking open.
Yes. Loving it. Loving it. Okay. Home stretch. We cut to Dawn. She's bringing home a pizza. Beth is going to be babysitting Kenzie and she's supposed to be going to work, quote unquote, but it's a drop off. And the caller slash possible kidnapper is giving her directions on where to go. It's like this abandoned barn in the middle of nowhere. Katie's supposed to be in the basement. This looks to me, I wrote, one of my notes was, it looks like it's a David Fincher set. Like from Seven or something like that.
There were so many really high anxiety scenes in this.
Yeah, it's super intense. And it's like this abandoned farmhouse and she gets attacked by a guy. And we later find out that it's Freddie who's scamming her and he's trying to sift through the money that he, and we come to find out it's just cut up shreddings of Katie Bailey's missing signs,
which I'm so glad, because on top of it all, I didn't want her to lose her job too.
Right. I didn't want her to lose her gig. And he finds a gun and he's like, oh shit. He's like kind of surprised by the gun, throws down the bag. He's like, I'm sorry, Don. It's just, he just reminds me of Dave Chappelle's character, Tyrone Biggums. It's like the Tyrone Biggums school of acting. He's just, I'm sorry, Bethy. I'm sorry, Don. And So she goes home defeated. She's bruised up because she fell on something and scuffed her face up. She tells Betty that she just fell at work and it's just the radiation that makes her dizzy. And Beth is like, oh my God, you know, I'll take you to the hospital. And she says, no, which kind of makes me feel like she's kind of a G, where it's like, you know what? I'm not going to stress you about your junkie brother.
I think she's totally a G. She's like holding down a job at the 7-Eleven full time.
Yeah.
Looking for her daughter, going to Barnes alone at night.
Possibly going to kill a dude. And she's just like, I fucked up. And she's like, hey, did you ever ask the cops about that caller, that scammer? And she's like, yeah, she lies to her. Yeah, I did. They told me they agreed with you. It's just like, somebody scamming, and it's
and you know that's gonna come back to bite her.
Oh yeah, something's gonna happen to Freddie's. Probably gonna die.
You think Freddie's gonna die?
Probably, like OD or something. Maybe.
I don't get that idea. I think he's gonna.
Okay, it could happen. I don't want it to happen.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Missy Sager being dragged into Bernie's tavern by a dude and she gets thrown into a room and she's crying for help. She's screaming. And then someone says, nobody can hear you. And she looks over, she says, who are you? And she says, I'm Katie Bailey.
Boom.
Blackout. Episode over.
Boom.
Your thoughts on this last sequence here?
I mean, now we're like, they're in like the downstairs of this bar that people go to. So they can't be heard. It has to be somebody we know. It's a man. He has a van. Katie's been held this entire year.
Yeah.
So I think you are right that it's going to be like the girls is going to be the next part. And then it's going to be all like the character stuff. But you're just like, who is it?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel about this title, Poor Sisyphus?
Well, it's interesting because it's like, who are they calling Sisyphus? Do you know what I mean? Sisyphus is, for anybody listening, Sisyphus is a Greek myth about somebody who like cheated death. And then, but was also, didn't cheat death and it was a trick, like tricked people into things. So he got forced into rolling the same boulder up and down a hill over and over again.
Right.
So I think it's about people repeating patterns.
Yeah.
People stuck in their own, creating their own misery. I wouldn't, you know, at first you always think it's going to be the title character, but I don't think she doesn't seem like a trickster.
No. And then there's this myth, like the wiki. This is just cursory, like Google shit. What is the moral of Sisyphus? Sisyphus teaches us to never give in to circumstantial disappointments or try to escape from failures, rather accept failures the same way we accept our achievements. And most importantly, no matter how much we lose in our quest, we must never fall back down till we fulfill our full potential. I mean, the chief says, you know, I still believe you're still worth fighting for and I still believe in you. Then also they said that Sisyphus married his niece or had sex with his niece or some shit.
I didn't see that part. I think I just sort of black out people having sex with relatives.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like fathers worked. This is Miss Lady Hawk herself worked as a title. These last two, I'm just kind of like, what does that mean?
Well, and I keep being like, what am I missing that it means?
Yeah.
Who am I supposed to make? But I think they probably also do that on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it could apply to a lot of the characters.
Yes.
People having dishonesty, and because everybody's dishonest. Everybody is told they're not dishonest, but they're doing dishonesties. Mm-hmm. And I think they get stuck in their own torture because of it. And then they have to break out of that cycle.
Right. A lot of people are holding back. No Frank this week. We just know he's not the dad.
Which we didn't think he was.
No, we didn't think he was a dad. Yeah. I feel like they're going to bring these girls back. I was relieved. How did you feel when you saw Katie? I was relieved that she wasn't dead.
I'm so relieved because I need Dawn to get her daughter back.
Yeah. Cause Mayor was like, oh, she's a known drug abuser. She's probably in the Delaware River somewhere. But
even as she was saying that, she was still putting up posters.
Oh yeah. She was still. Yeah. Part of me really feels like 75% of me feels like they're going to get these girls back next episode. And then they're going to figure out this Aaron stuff. And it's going to be somebody's holding some shit back. Lori knows some shit, according to the episode 5 teaser. Do you have any, do you have any predictions going forward? Are we still?
I don't. I feel like, I feel like everybody's holding something back and it's just going to be, I still think Billy's holding something back. I've always felt like we're going to get a bomb dropped on us by Lori.
Yeah.
There's still going to be more about Kevin. The teenagers all know something, but it's whether or not it's actually related to something important or not.
Right. That's true. That's true.
How about you? How do you feel?
Yeah, I just feel like they're going to, like I said, the girls are going to come home next weekend. Next week, they're coming home. If not this episode, it's going to be episode 6. Because usually, like I always say this with TV shows, the penultimate show is usually where all this rising action comes to a head. And then there's like this denouement at the end of the, in the finale. There's going to be some revelations, like Sharp Objects kind of, if you watched Sharp Objects, I don't know if you watched that, but the Amy Adams cop show.
I know what you're talking about. I didn't watch it.
It's good, but the ending was like, oh shit. Like you're kind of like, you solve some stuff. I don't think it's going to be that. I think we're going to figure everything. We're going to find everything out about who killed Aaron and who this dude at the tavern is. But it's just going to be, this one's going to be a little different because it's about Mare's redemption.
Yeah.
Because there's all those edits of in the trailer where Mare is being brought into her house and Lori's like, you know, bringing her into the house. There's going to be some type of shootout, you know. I don't know. It's
exciting.
It is. It is. This is the thing that I haven't this year. Last year I was excited about this video game, The Last of Us Part Two. My listeners know that this has become my new obsession of 2021 as far as media is concerned.
But they've got us invested in everybody. Yeah. Because of all of their layers and their vulnerabilities. We're just like, we want them to win. We want them to overcome.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's it. I think everybody, thank you for listening. If you have any thoughts, hit us up on Twitter at Leah Bonema, at Chris Lamberth, at Mundane Festival. You can email us at Mundane Festival Pod. With your thoughts, you can email us. We'll read them and talk about your
thoughts. Is that Mundane Festival Pod at Gmail?
Yes, that's mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. It's all in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your kind words on this endeavor. We'll talk to you next time.
Can't wait.
Take it easy, everybody.